Chase Thomas podcast.
Hello and welcome to a Sunday evening edition of the Full Ride on the Chase Thomas podcast. I am the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined, as I am, by that guy down there in Tequila, Georgia, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. That guy. I guess that's as good as an introduction as I can get.
Guy down there. It was
Marcellus Wiley. He's that dude. Mm. I'm just that guy. Just that guy.
But, are you a dude person? Because I'm not a dude person. I don't say dude in my personal life. It's never really been in my vernacular.
Oh, drop something. I mean, I guess I once was. I guess I'm more of a man. More of a man kind of guy.
You're a man guy is what you're saying.
I'm a man guy. Yeah. But I mean, I'll drop a good dude. Mm-hmm. I'll drop a good dude. It's all context, you know?
I suppose. I don't think I've ever been that kind of person. Someone got on to me tonight about using the term Rolodex. Like, how old am I to be using that term? And, like, it wasn't like I was actually talking about a literal one, but, like, I was talking about the context of just being like, yeah, like, it's in my Rolodex. And they were like, how old are you to be uttering that phrase? I don't think that's an old person thing. Do you ever use the expression, it's in my Rolodex?
I do not use that expression. That is definitely a throwback right there. And yeah, I feel like the dude's kind of changed, like, as a sports term. You know, like, oh, they got dudes on their team. So, I don't know. Language is always fluid, you know, always changing.
Always changing. How was your new year, Matt Green?
It was excellent, man. Me and Tori kept it pretty low key. Just hung out, made a excellent steak dinner. Mm. And honestly, we were both about falling asleep around 8:39. Then we caught a second win there. You know, we made it to New Year's. So, but how about yourself?
You made it. I'm glad. New Year's was cool. New Year's was low key, like you. Plans fell through, but New Year's Day was a lot of fun, and this weekend was great because my parents came up and we went to the UT game last night, which did not go in UT's favor because we can't have nice things when I'm involved with UT stuff. But it was very pleasant. It was a very good weekend, and it was good. Got a awesome biscuit. It was fried chicken. And along with waffles, some call it chicken and waffles, Matt Green.
Ah, is this it sounds like you've made a discovery.
Yeah, I made a discovery. It turns out
this chicken and waffles actually is pretty good together. Yeah, it's a staple.
It's so good. Like, I was just like, this needs to be a staple in my life. So that was great. Watched a lot of football, obviously. Watched the playoff. And just what happened on Friday we'll get to is really fascinating, and where we're going, and just all kinds of NFL. Well, I guess it is kind of NFL and college football news, but yeah, it was nice. How did Zeus do? Did he make it to midnight?
Oh yeah. Zeus is going strong, man. He's always, he's a party animal.
Party animal. And also, my prediction was right that you would not send any Zeus content for social media in the past week.
That'll happen.
Yeah, I don't know, Matt Green. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. What is the Michael? I've already forgotten the Michael Scott expression. It's
I just think the George Bush where he freezes mid phrase. He's like, you fool me, you're not gonna fool me again.
No, but I gotta go back and watch that. Don't forget, folks, you can listen to the Full Ride on the Chase Thomas podcast during the normal season every Sunday and Thursday. I have some exciting stuff that we'll talk about, how we're going to do this show on Thursdays going forward with the off season, because we will ultimately, once this all wraps up with the college football season, unfortunately, move to one a week. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Follow Matt at Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Leave us a rating, 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Just type in Chase Thomas Podcast. If you're not an Apple Podcast listener, if you've got an iPhone, just go ahead and do it. Helps the show continue to grow. And like I mentioned last week, some exciting news to share about the future of the podcast and where we're going and what's next in 2021. I'm very excited about the next step that I'm very, you know, I've said it a lot, very excited to share that news with you all. Matt, how did you plan out your college football watching this past week? Were you able to get everything in? Did you have the strength and the fortitude to get through Texas A&M and North Carolina following a full night of playoff action?
Oh, without a doubt, man. I feel like I got so much college football there on the first. I feel like I was still craving a little bit on the second, but yeah, I feel like the first as a Georgia fan worked out perfectly for me. You know, I got to see my team right there at noon, and then you get the two playoff games back to back. It's just basically 10 straight hours of college football, which is what I'm all about.
Absolutely, absolutely. The Georgia game we'll get to, just a wild game, and that was another thing. I got to watch that with my parents on Friday, so that was cool. We got to start with the news this week. Tom Herman fired by the University of Texas. Crystal Gante had a really weird statement about Herman a few weeks back, if you remember, in early December, about the future of his status at UT, and it was essentially, he is our coach. Not that he will be our coach in the future, but that he is our current football head coach, which, breaking news, folks.
It's like The Office. It is your birthday.
That's essentially what it was. They quickly move on. So clearly they knew that Sark was interested, and there was some agent talking, would be my suspicion there, and they were like, yeah, this is happening, so we're getting Sark. And Sark's trying to pull.
That's the way you got to do it. It's like, if you're gonna, you know, fire somebody, at least have the next move ready. The school just looks so unprofessional when this has to go on weeks and weeks and hear rumors about who's taking what and who they're interested in, who are they not interested in. It's like, you heard Herman was fired. I almost heard Sarkisian was hired before I heard Herman was fired. It was that quick. And there's obviously a little going back and forth if Sarkisian was or wasn't, but in the end, I think this is an excellent hire for Texas. I think Sarkisian, it's like Alabama really is like coach rehab. You know, you're struggling a little bit. You know, go back to Alabama. He'll set you straight, get you another job, get you another coordinator, a head coaching job. So, and that's what he's done. I think it's an excellent hire. And Tom Herman, 32-18 in 4 years at Texas, wasn't terrible. I don't know. Might be a quick trigger, but I feel like if Sarkisian, I don't know. What do you think about Sarkisian in this job?
I think Sark is a better head coach than Lane Kiffin, and I think what Sark has done with this offense is just kind of built on what Kiffin did well, and is doing it even better. I like Lane, and I think they're both brilliant offensive minds. They're actually really close. There's a really good piece on ESPN about just how close they are, but they're also wired completely differently. Like, Sark is just like super like intense all the time, and he is a very in your face, very work, and Kiffin is not really that guy. So that's why they really bonded at USC when they were in their early 20s and stuff. They were just like, I don't know, they're very different. So Sark did really great work revitalizing that Washington program. We all remember the Chris Peterson portion of it, but early on, those were Sark players, and he was recruiting really well and was getting Washington back out of a bad spot. And I think he actually would have been pretty solid at USC long-term if those unfortunate things did not come down the pike for him. And it seems like he is a lot better now than he was then, and I'm happy for him, and hope for the best there and continued success there on that front with his personal stuff. But he's a brilliant offensive mind, and he's also an excellent recruiter. We know that. And I think all of that can be true. And I still am just like, got to see it. This Texas job, we thought Tom Herman made a lot of sense. We thought Charlie Strong at the time made a lot of sense. They both had a lot of success before coming to Texas. Texas is a complicated job. I talked to Ian Boyd of Inside Texas a few weeks back, and we were talking about like who the names could be and like, all this kind of stuff. Like, Sark didn't really come up on the radar. And what made Mack Brown so good at Texas for so long is he's just the CEO coach. And that's kind of what you have to be, because you are dealing with so many different off the field stuff in Austin, that it's not all about just what you do with the product, but it's an easy job. And when I say easy, I don't mean easy with dealing with the boosters and all that kind of stuff, but like, you're in a recruiting hotbed. They had a blue chip ratio that is good enough to win a national title. This is not a rebuild. They can immediately contend with the right coaching staff. They can. Like, it's just the talent is there. They have 5 stars and 4 stars everywhere. That people in Texas want to play for Texas. You just have to give them a reason to play for Texas. Jimbo has seized on that, and Jimbo's done a really great job. But Texas is still Texas, and A&M still A&M. There's no excuse for Texas not to be a perennial top 5, top 10 program. There's just not. You have no excuses. USC is the same way. USC, there's no excuse. Living in Southern California, the players in that area, going to school there, it sells itself. There's no, absolutely no reason that their expectation should not be top 5, at worst, top 8, top 9 every single season. That is a realistic expectation for these two schools. And Sark now being a head coach at USC and Texas, I mean, that's a lot of pressure. He's used to this already. He's been great at Bama. He's probably evolved a lot as a person, but like, Texas is hard, and it's clearly a lot harder than we've all thought with everything that goes into it, because it's not just about the talent. And if it was, Texas would still be going 10-2, 11-1, having some national title. Like, they would be in the playoff at this point, but they haven't been, even with a playoff capable roster. So I don't know. It's a wait and see thing for me with Texas.
They're in a kind of a weird position because they obviously are that tradition, you know, that they, you know, the
but
ceiling
it's not the
is...
tradition like other schools like Notre Dame, where it's like, no. Texas is in a recruiting hotbed. Like, it's not Nebraska. Nebraska had a tradition of winning, but guess what? You can't. They don't, the recruiting is just not there.
That's true. I mean, they're definitely in a recruiting hotbed, but in terms of just recent success, you know, it's all of their cachet is based on their past reputation. You know what I mean? Like, they've had some good teams. Like, they went to the national title game in 2009, but you know, that's 11 years ago that they were really like truly nationally relevant, you know? So I think this is imperative that Texas get this hire right, because like, Charlie Strong, he had a losing record in 3 years, you know? So that's understandable. I feel like he's still got a short leash, but 3 years, a losing record, like, you can't do that. But Tom Herman, like, this is a short season. So this team, what, 7-3 this year? It's like, if this is a full season, do they go 10-3? And do you now feel better about it? Because, you know, you got 35 wins now in 4 seasons. Like, he wasn't doing poorly. So he wasn't getting Texas to where we all think Texas should be. But, if Sarkisian doesn't get, you know, if he's not successful for whatever reason, it could start to be a black cloud over this job that, you know, it's just a revolving door over there. You got to win a championship in 3 years or else you're on the hot seat.
But that's how it should be. That there's too much talent. If you are in the blue chip ratio and you are the University of Texas head coach, I think it's fair for the boosters and that athletic department to be like, no, you need to be in the playoff once every other year.
It's just not fair for anybody to be in that situation. You know,
it's paid a lot. It's fine.
If you judge Kirby Smart for the last 3 years, you're just like, oh, you know what? No conference titles, no playoff appearances. You're doing awful. Like, that's –
it's not awful. No. The expectations are different. It's okay at certain places to have different expectations. I don't think that's wrong.
Of course. And that obviously makes sense. But – and I'm obviously, Georgia's been better than Texas over the last 3 years. But – I think it's, you're getting in a slippery, it's a slippery slope, because they need to take a step back and realize they're not what they once were. And if you want to be that, like, it takes some patience. Like, if you look at Michigan, like, they're basically Michigan right now.
No, like, Michigan doesn't have the players. Look at the blue chip.
I disagree. I mean, Michigan's recruited just as well as Texas.
No.
Like, but I'm just saying in terms of being in a conference that's just dominated by one other team, like, yeah, that might be your main rival and, you know, you can go back and forth with them, but they own this conference and they have for a solid decade
or so.
So they're to automatically kind of not be the big man on campus in your conference. Like, Texas isn't where they once were. And so you got to be patient, get the right guy in there, let him do his thing, because it seems like Texas is almost like the pressure. It can almost just, you know, work against itself for Texas. It's like it's the pressure is a privilege, you know. Kirby
Smart.
Well,
I mean, that's
loves,
the Yankees thing, where
that.
It's like, do you want the Yankees job? Well, guess what? Do you want to win? We have more resources than everybody. You should win. The Yankees having
pro sports, yeah. You know, pro sports are different though, because the Yankees roster's got championship players.
But
on,
that's
so
what Texas has. Have you looked
but
at their
Texas
roster?
Hasn't. I mean,
Sam Ehlinger is good enough to be a playoff quarterback. He should be in the playoff. The fact that he went 4 years without ever being in a college football playoff game is insane.
Look, I mean, yeah, Texas gets big-time players, but it's not like they've been, you know, a top three recruiting class, or, you know, it's not like they're getting the elite of the elite.
But like, they are losing those guys to A&M. Like, what's separating them from number 8 to number 3 is the coaching staff and not recruiting well enough to be in that number 3 spot. There's no excuse that A&M's out recruiting them. There's just not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it has a lot. The SEC has a lot to do with it. You know, that's a big, you know, thing Texas A&M has going for them now. But yeah, I think it's something about Texas. It's like I don't know. It's like such an elitist kind of view. Like they just kind of turn their nose up on who they should be, and it's like, no, you got to just let a guy come in here and build a program, because that's what it's going to take. And when you haven't. I mean, is that their last conference title when Colt McCoy?
I mean, yeah, it was like 7 years ago.
No, have they won a conference title since Colt McCoy? That was 2009 when they lost to Bama.
They have not won a conference title, I think, since Mac Brown.
So, I mean, that's – you got to reevaluate and, like, change what the standards are. Like, not that you're not going for national championships anymore, but maybe it's not 3 years and get out of here. Like, I feel like – Tom Herman, in my opinion, deserved at least another year, because I feel like Texas was a solid team this year. Like, I mean, they weren't great, but like who'd they lose to? Oklahoma, Iowa State, and one other game.
They had
but,
a bad loss. Who was their bad loss? They always have a bad loss. I don't remember.
Yeah,
about
of course. But
I also I will know. Tell you about Herman, based on who I talked to about this. He was not the most liked person in Austin.
That's true, and that's so that
that is something that
another,
has to be factored in
to it, for sure.
So I would just say that Herman did not make a lot of friends, it seems like, based on what I've heard.
The other loss was TCU.
Okay, yeah, and TCU stinks. So yeah, I think Sark taking this job is interesting. I'm interested to see where Alabama goes to replace him. Do they promote from within? What do they do there? Who's the rehab hire they get to replace Sark? Who knows?
Oh man, that's a good question. Is it
because they went Kiffin?
I don't know if they get Gus Malzahn to come in there. No,
dude, Gus would be wild.
That would just if it wasn't just such a ridiculously different offense, that would be perfect, honestly. But I don't know. I can't. There's someone just
Adam
lost
Gase?
Their job in the NFL. Yeah, there you go. Somebody like that will come in and.
Dude, Adam Gase would be perfect.
Vitalize their career and become the head coach at Kansas State in 3 years.
Auburn, we didn't talk about this last week. They hired Boise State head coach Brian Harsin. Do you have any quick thoughts on that? Because I love the hire. I think there are some people who were a little bit anxious about it, but like if the alternative is Kevin Steele or like Hugh Freeze, I'm like, no, slam dunk, nailed it. Like Hugh Freeze seemed like the obvious one out of the gate, like very Auburn-y, especially with Bruce Pearl running the basketball program. But like Brian Harsin, like that's a great swing. Like everyone associates Dan Hawkins in Colorado, but I'm like, Colorado's a hard job. I don't know, whatever. Chris Peterson, like if you're going after somebody in that mold, and it's like he has coached in different conferences. It's not like he's a Boise lifer. I love this idea. Of him, he was already anxious at Boise. He didn't like the Mountain West deal. He didn't like being in that conference anymore. He wanted to get out, and now he gets to play big boy football. And I think he's going to recruit. Like he recruited really well at Boise. He was the first guy in on Zach Wilson. I think he's got a really great eye for talent. I think it's an exciting outside the box hire for Auburn, and I think more teams should do this. And I commend programs that are like. It might flame out. It might flame out spectacularly, or, you know, it might be awesome because, like, it does get old just every SEC team hiring former Saban assistants and stuff like that. Like, that's really boring. I like that Harsin is kind of a wild card, and I have no idea what he's going to be as head coach in the SEC. I'm excited to see it.
First of all, I knew you were gonna say you loved this hire because I feel like everyone else is killing it. You're like, no, this is a great hire. You know, people not respecting this, but you're just the contrarian. I knew it, but yeah, I think you're right. It seems like a lot of. Not only do we get a lot of retreads, but we get like, oh, he was on his staff and he played here, so yeah. Now he gets to, you know, come back, bring him. So I think that for that reason, you know, oh, he used to coach in the SEC and he's a sexy name, like. For that reason, that's what everyone was expecting of Auburn. And like you said, it's like kind of the most Auburn thing to do. And maybe it's best for Auburn that they, you know, the George Costanza, just go against whatever you were going to do.
Yeah.
Whatever you would normally logically do. But it definitely seemed like it came out of left field. But I mean, yeah, you look at the track record and he's been at Boise State for a while. And obviously, you know, Chris Peterson built that program, but he's been there long enough that he's kept it, you know, going to maybe not the standard that Boise that Chris Peterson had him at, but Boise State's still a, you know, 10-11 win team every year. So, it's not the big name we were expecting, but you know, that might be a good thing.
I think he qualifies as a big name. Like getting the Boise coach is a big name. I think that's
well, in just terms of how many SEC fans have ever heard of this guy's name before yeah. he got the Auburn job. You
That's
know what
true.
I mean? Not like Hugh Freeze or like wanting to get no. Lane Kiffin or something like that, you know, something crazy.
Tennessee fans might like revolt if Kalani Sitake got the BYU head coach got the UT job next year. They'd be like, whoa, who is this guy? It's like, this dude just almost went undefeated with BYU this year. Like, are you really upset just because he put like Mount West guy? Like, no, I would love a hire like that. I don't know. I love this.
And they might not know his name, but if they were like, this is the BYU coach, you're like, oh, yeah, nice. They've been good. They beat Tennessee, right? A couple
yeah, years back. Exactly.
Like, yeah, we've seen him. He's real good.
But we'll see. It's a huge wild card. I'm not going to say that it's going to be a slam dunk, that he's going to win titles, that he's going to beat Saban as many times as Gus Malzahn did, but I do appreciate teams thinking outside the box. It's always fun.
Yeah, I do wonder about the recruiting because it's like that's the lifeblood of SEC football, you know, and he's a Boise State guy. So I think head coaching job was Arkansas State. So,
well, have you seen who he's targeting?
No, who's that?
Del McGee to join his staff.
Oh, that would be a great hire. Del McGee is Georgia running back coach is like, probably the best, one of the best recruiters in all of college football. So that would be, and he used to be the head coach at Carver in Columbus, which is down there like, what, 30 minutes from.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, like 30 minutes from Auburn or so. Mm-hmm. So he recruits that area really well. I mean, he recruits all of the state of Georgia, really. But
so this would be a big gain for Auburn if they were to pry him away.
Yeah, you'll see Del McGee be the assistant head coach and running backs coach or something next year for Georgia to keep him, I guess.
Yeah, he's getting a promotion if he's staying.
Some kind of title change.
Also, good guy. Wearing the James Cook jersey for his late father in that game.
Right?
On Friday.
It wasn't flattering on him, but
it doesn't matter. That's why part of the reason you liked it more.
Yeah, that was awesome that he did that for James Cook and Dalvin Cook's dad passing away. What was only like 46 years old, 48 or something. Really, real freak thing that happened.
Yeah. Thoughts and prayers to the Cook family. Urban Meyer is apparently going back to the NFL and taking the Jaguars job and coaching Trevor Lawrence. He's assembling a staff. I think this came from Rappaport, right? NFL.com.
This isn't final, is it?
It's not final, but that's the strong rumor is that he's expected to be the next Jaguars head coach once they fire Doug Marrone, because they currently have a head coach.
Yeah, that it seems like the writing is on the wall. And honestly, Urban, you might as well do it. Like, I feel like personally, I don't think it might not be the best decision. I feel like going from like Texas USC, like revitalizing one of those big college sleeping giants would be the better move just because he's such a good recruiter and he's so good in the college game. But I imagine because he's been so good in the college game, he probably wants to see if he can cut it in the NFL.
What if he just stayed retired? Urban, you have
Urban
nothing to prove.
That,
stay home.
You know, he's only got like 5 years. Like, he's not that young, but
He's
he's
like
just
56,
like,
right?
what is that?
Is he? I think he's 56, right? Something like
Yeah,
that.
he is. So he's probably only got like 5 years before he just kind of gets burnt out again. But you know, who knows? Like, give it a roll, see what happens. And honestly, like his biggest issue, I would say, as a college coach, like he had very few flaws, was probably just motivating teams week in and week out. Like you saw it at Florida and Ohio State. You know, they'd have that couple games a year where they just come out sleepwalking. Sometimes they pull it out, sometimes they get upset. But NFL players, it's like the money motivates them, man. You don't need to motivate these grown men. So maybe Urban, maybe his style could work in the NFL.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens there. I don't know. I have no thoughts until it actually happens and what the staff looks like, but I do not like any of that. Dan Mullen also reportedly getting an NFL look. I don't buy this at all. I don't buy the Mullen stuff at all. I buy the Pat Fitzgerald stuff at Northwestern strongly, and I think he will get some strong looks from like Chicago, or if that becomes open, or I'm trying to think of another obvious. Like, I don't think he's getting an Atlanta Falcon look. I don't think that's a thing. But
I wonder about Dan Mullen in the NFL though, because like recruiting, we always talk about, is the worst part of him as a college coach, you know?
yeah.
So if he doesn't have to recruit, like he's proven he's an excellent play caller, like he knows how to coach offense. I wonder, he's just such a goober, you know what I mean? I just feel like grown men like wouldn't respect him. I don't know that that's true, but I don't know. I feel like he might get coached in the NFL. Who knows really? Like Cliff Kingsbury is looking to be a pretty good NFL coach, you know?
Well,
So,
Kingsbury's probably getting fired next year, so I wouldn't go that far. But
they've been borderline. They're a contender kind of, right? What do they have, like seven,
yeah,
eight wins?
contender. Did you just put them in the contenders? They're missing the
Is his
playoffs.
first year? Is his first year,
It's his
right?
second year.
Okay, I mean NFL coaches, who knows? But Dan Mullen is proven a lot more at the college level than Cliff Kingsbury ever did. That's all I'm
Yeah,
saying.
for sure.
So who knows? He could get a job. I don't. I think he'll flop the interview. You know, I think he'll be like, "Yo, he's got a great resume, but we weren't feeling him." Who you got next?
He can't help himself. Would you like to talk about any of his post-game Oklahoma loss quotes?
Oh my God, man. It's just the latest. Like, I don't know why he always does this to himself. Like, it 'cause honestly, that was one of the games. I know SEC fans always say the games they lose, oh, they weren't motivated or whatever. You know, it's the classic SEC excuse. But like, there was a couple of the games in bowl season where you could be like, there's too many opt-outs. Like, the result of this game, it's not really relevant to how good these teams were. You know what I mean? And that's how that Florida Oklahoma game was. Like, if Florida's losing their top four receivers, including like Pitts and Tony, or maybe their best two players on their team outside of Trask, and then like three of their like four best players on defense, like Florida was losing so much. It's just normal to be like, yeah, we were pretty shorthanded, but the guys we had, they fought their tails off, and you know, we got beat pretty bad today. Oklahoma was a lot better than us, but it's just like, oh well, we didn't even have to play the game. We could have chosen not to play. We didn't have enough players, but you know, we wanted to, because it's like the 2020 team played their last game 11 days ago. It's like, who says stuff like that, man? That's like, oh, it's just Dan Mullen just always putting his foot in his mouth. I just don't get it.
I just him and Dabo, not a great week for those two. And I can't say that I don't not love it, because I did. And Dabo getting wrecked was my favorite development of the week for sure.
Well, you want to get into it? Ohio State, Clemson, might as well right
Bulletin
now.
board material. Well, you have, before we get into that, I guess this will lead into it. You have a strong take, because we very much disagree on the college football postseason. I think you and I are on different sides of the fence when it comes to this thing. So you have a case of expanding the playoff to 8 or 12 teams, correct?
Yes, I
Okay,
do.
so lay out your plan. Lay out your case for expansion of the playoffs, Matt Green.
Well, I think this expansion is inevitable just because these opt-outs are just a bad look for the sport. You know what I mean? No one's blaming these dudes for, like, making a professional decision. I guess I do use the word dudes, by the way. So no one's blaming these guys for making a professional decision. And, you know, I have one game left in my college career. I have the most important day of my life 4 months from now. I'm just going to prepare for that and try to make millions. You know, like, no one's blaming these guys. But as college football fans, like, it's just terrible because these are some of the best matchups we get all year. Texas A&M, North Carolina, like, that's a great matchup that I was looking forward to seeing. And, like, without North Carolina's two best running backs, the game just loses a lot, you know, especially Florida, Oklahoma. That should have been a great game. That should have been a 55-52 type of game if Florida has all their offensive players. But I digress. So you have to try to save these bowl games. And I think that's the only way you can do it is really by expanding the playoffs and getting more teams involved. You know, kind of how we've seen baseball with the wild card, expanding it so more fan bases are interested. But the number one argument for expanding the playoff is that, oh, well, we already have all these blowouts in the semifinals. Anyway, why do we need 8 teams in? And I think that's because maybe we're not getting the right 4 teams to begin with. Like, maybe 5 and 6 could have given a better effort than 3 and 4 or even 2 and 4 some years. Like, it's just so important to get the right teams, at least in the semifinals. And I think if you expand it to 8 teams, it's just like if you look at this year, Notre Dame got in the playoff for beating Clemson, right? Like, I mean, they beat a pretty good North Carolina team, but they got in the playoff for beating Clemson. Clemson got in the playoff for beating Notre Dame. So it's like both of these teams lose by 3 touchdowns. Or I guess Notre Dame lost by 17. It felt bigger than that. But both these teams lost handedly in the semifinals, and maybe neither of them was actually one of the 4 best teams. Like, I'm not saying that Texas A&M, Florida, and Georgia were better than Clemson and Notre Dame, because there's no way of knowing. I'm not trying to be like a huge SEC homer or anything. But with so few common opponents, it's like there's no way of proving that either of those teams are better. And if we at least get it to 8 teams, then it's like we get that Notre Dame A&M matchup in the first round of the playoff, and then Notre Dame wins, and then you're not upset about Notre Dame being in the Final Four. But it's just getting all the way to the Final Four without having to prove it against an elite team, like, right then and there, like, in the playoff, it would just make everyone so much more satisfied. Like, My number one point is college football is the only sport where you play like 10% of the field in the sport, and then experts and fans think they know exactly who the best is. And we just need to take out as many opinions as possible, because we know all the bias that goes into opinions. A lot of them is recruiting rankings, and some of the biases are legitimate. Like, I mean, someone like Cincinnati being undefeated and facing a 2-loss Georgia team that was, you know, very shorthanded with all the opt-outs. And, you know, it was a great game, but Georgia beat them. And Georgia's also the 4th best team in the SEC this year. So there's a reason these biases exist, because lots of times they prove to be right. But there's just so – sports are great because we don't know what's going to happen. And I feel like just leave it, leave the experts' opinions out of it, because it's also the only sport. It's like, we love to look at power rankings and things like that throughout the season. This is the only sport where the power rankings, like, literally decide the postseason. So I think I would be down for an 8-team playoff. I'd also, if you want to keep that top 4, give the top 4 teams a bye, and then go to 12. Like, that would also be sick. But I just, anything to, you're going to have to get more fan bases involved, and you're just going to have the automatic qualifiers for the major conferences, and probably one group of 5 team, depending on how many you choose to do with the playoff. But I think it's time for expansion. It just, we have to.
I think your point about, like, removing opinions is an important one, where, like, we can stop a lot of these talking heads from talking about this kind of stuff ad nauseum. And that is something that has driven me batshit crazy this bowl season. It's the same arguments, the same conversations about all these different teams. But I think it would fix a lot of opt-outs. But I also, and this is something that I've posited to friends and family, is that, like, the only way outside of paying players, like, that's one way, is to give a financial incentive for players to play in bowl games. Like, that is something where it's like, hey, playing in front of X amount of people on a national stage, like, here's what you get for playing in our university's bowl game. Like, that is the only way, I think, at this point to save college football bowl season. Because I'm very much concerned about where we're headed, and I don't blame the players for opting out. I just think the only way to get out of that and change that trend is to either pay them or remove the playoff, because everything comes down to it. Those guys who opted out, like all those Georgia players who opted out, how many of them would have played in the playoff game? How many of them would have suited back up for a playoff game? When you make everything about this thing that only accounts for such a small portion of the college football season and only a select few teams get in, it just destroys the sport, because that's not what college football is about. College football is about everybody. College football is about Maction. College football is about Saturday mornings. Like, college football is about Iowa being boring as shit. College football is about Wisconsin never having a competent offense. Like, that is what makes college football a beautiful thing. Pac-12 after dark, it's not the playoff. And so much of the oxygen surrounding the conversation is about the playoff now that, yeah, I understand that, like, expanding the playoff would solve a lot of the problems of just, like, having the same four teams, which I think is a bigger problem than just having Texas A&M and versus Notre Dame. It's that, guess what? You're going to still end up having the same group of teams, because it's all about recruiting, and they are going to out-recruit everybody. They're still going to be it, and it's going to hurt the sport when it's the same three or four teams every year. It just... fans are going to be like, wow, it's really helpless for us to play. And if you're a casual college football fan, you're like, why do I want to watch Alabama Clemson again? Like, what is the rationale for that? So even if you expand to eight, it's still going to wind up, by and large, with the same result. Because guess what? MLB just expanded the playoff system. Would you like to guess what seeds the two teams that made the World Series were this year?
Who's the Dodgers and the Rays?
Two number one seeds.
The Rays the number one seed?
Yes, they were.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Both. Number one seed. You expanded the playoff. More excitement. More fun. Guess what? The two best teams in baseball still found their way into the World Series.
But that's great. But that's great because all these teams still felt like they had a shot to win it, and they did. But, you know, the cream rose to the top, and the best teams...
And I think that's what will always happen. So if you expand the playoff, the cream will still rise to the top. Bama will still beat you. Bama will still overrun you. Clemson will still overrun you. Ohio State will still overrun you. When Georgia is back clicking again, they will overrun you. This is...
But those are a lot of teams you just named. And so if all those teams are getting the playoff, like, you're going to see some amazing matchups. Like last year, like, that's the most important thing, is the best teams will get to the Final Four and the national championship if you expand it to eight. So it's like, why don't we just assure that that cream is rising to the top? You know, like, it's just like Florida last year, like, Florida lost to Georgia and LSU, like, and they gave LSU a game, and you saw what LSU did to Clemson and Oklahoma in the college football playoff. Like, they beat them handedly. For all we know, Florida was better than Oklahoma or Clemson last year. And it's like, if we get a playoff, like, I'm not saying they were, but maybe Clemson's the two seed and Florida's the seven seed, and they beat them in the first round. It's like, oh, wow. Like, we didn't know as much as we thought we did. You know, that's the best part about sports. And I feel like college football is kind of robbing themselves of that by just keeping it in this little club that only Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma are invited to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this is my whole thing, is I'd rather them just have their one club outing, which is the college football BCS national title. Just give them one game, let them do that, let them have their fun, and bring back bowl season, because bowl season I enjoyed more than the national championship anyway. Like, I enjoyed what bowl season was for a full month. I don't like all the opt-outs, and I don't like seeing bowl season just destroyed, because that is more important to me. The college football season as a whole is more important to me than the playoff. The playoff sucks. The game, like, the Notre Dame-Alabama game sucked. And guess what? Ohio State-Clemson got out of hand. That turned into a blow-up. That kind of sucked. Like, it's just not good. And the sport is not better off for it. And
Those were not good games this weekend. But
do you think Bama-Cincinnati's going to be good? Do you think a lot of those games, if you expand the playoff, are still going to be good? I don't think
so.
See,
but that's not the games that are as important. I don't think that 8-1, like that number one or number two team probably is clearly better than number seven and number eight. But I think that 3-6 matchup, that 4-5 matchup, like to figure that out, like decide it on the field, who's actually better, because we just never know. You know what I mean? There's just 100 different things that can happen in sports. And I feel like just having it something other than our regional bias and just like historical bias of a certain program, I feel like is a better way to decide.
Well, who does Ohio State play, Matt Green? Who do they play? Like, they can't hang with them.
Well, and that's the biggest thing, because it's so difficult to get the criteria for this Final Four with an eight team. It's so much easier. You can punish Ohio State for not having the resume, but they're still in the playoff and they still get to prove it on the field. It's like, because the only way to judge teams is on the resume, because it's just everything else is just so subjective. So it's like you could still punish, like maybe you wanted to make a point that they didn't deserve a top four seed because they only played six games. It's like, okay, make them a five seed, make them a six seed, and they probably blow out the three or the four seed from what you saw them do at Clemson. So if we just decide everything on the field, everyone will just be so much more satisfied with the sport. And like, I'm not pushing for 16, but even 16 teams would be awesome. Like, March Madness is like the greatest thing ever. Like, we know that like the best team might not win every year, but when someone wins the NCAA basketball tournament, are you ever saying, yeah, but they weren't like really that good? It's like, no, they just won six games in a row. They beat all the other teams that beat all those other teams. It's like, you can't argue with the bracket. It's just, it's perfect. And it's satisfying from a fan perspective. And I feel like we gotta do this for the fans. You know, it's like, we figure out a way that these bowl sponsors can get their money, however many games you want to do. But I feel like they got to expand like the number of teams that can win a national championship. Like Loyola Chicago, you know, they didn't have much of a chance to win a national championship when the season started, but they did have a 1% chance to get there. And crazy things like that happen. And if college football was opened up, and not to mention with the transfer portal, like parity is already, you know, going to get better in college football just with the one-time transfers. If there's 16 teams making the playoff every year, like there's just that many more programs, like legitimate programs that you can go to that can get you to the NFL. Like right now, like these recruits come out that are from a recruit from Florida's comes out with his top eight. And I'm like, I can literally guess who seven of his top eight schools are. And I don't even know who this guy is yet. You know what I mean? It's the same schools over and over. So if there's 16 teams, it's just including more. Alabama's still going to get probably to the national championship a lot of times, but it's just, it's going to be so much more satisfying for the teams that at least got to lose before someone told them that they weren't number one. Like I couldn't imagine being a diehard Central Florida fan or Boise State or whoever's had an undefeated season in recent years and just like, nope, you're like number seven. Great year though, but you're like maybe number six. But great undefeated season. You guys tried really hard.
I suppose. I don't know, man. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this front. Because I think if you expand, you got to take away games. And you got to cut regular season games. And I don't think they want to do that either. And I think that's worse for the fans. That's more neutral site games, and nobody wants that.
We got to get rid of the regular season neutral site game, too.
That's a bad trend.
You just see this game in the middle of Houston that's 30% filled. It's just, doesn't do it for me.
No, it's a bad idea and it should stop. The actual games that happen on the field. You love the stuff that happens on the field, Matt Green.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about Ohio State Clemson. Ohio State just blows out Clemson 49-28. That score is closer than it felt. Fields just uncorking bombs to Octave and everybody. And like, this was the Trey Sermon coming out party, like just full on Ezekiel Elliott mode from him. Fields took some nasty shots in this game, which is something to be concerned about if you're an Ohio State fan going into Bama. But that dude's a warrior, and man, this is Can you remember a more, like, this is the most impressive Ohio State win since they blew out Bama, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's got to be. You're talking about the 2014
yes.
semifinal? Yeah, I think it's got to be, because just for how much everyone was questioning this Ohio State, myself, this Ohio State team, myself included, like Justin Fields, you know, there start whispers that he might not even be worth a top 10 pick anymore. Like, he was starting to slide down draft boards, and I mean, I think he just solidified. I mean, and rightly so. He struggled, and maybe two, against the two best teams they played this year, and struggled for him because of how flawless he's been since he's been at Ohio State. But this performance, I mean, just throwing the deep ball, and like you said, just taking hits. I mean, don't even get me started on the targeting call. Like, I mean, I understand the guy's form, but he hit him in the rib cage. Like, I don't get that. But yeah, this is the most impressed I've been with Justin Fields. Like, I mean, this guy's an NFL quarterback. I think you can clearly tell. And yeah, I mean, I just don't think any of us saw Clemson getting blown out like this. This is the lowest rushing total of the season, or second lowest rushing total of the season with 44 yards, and their lowest was the loss against Notre Dame in overtime. So that's the recipe for shutting down this Clemson offense, and Ohio State did that. And Trevor Lawrence, you know, he looked good, but Justin Fields, he looked better in this game.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those impressive things. This is something I was thinking about. Like, how much do you think Clemson was hurt from not having Tony Elliott when you watched this game? How much did you think, man, if they had Tony Elliott, this goes differently? Did you have that thought at all?
I wondered that, but, you know, I feel like that kind of thing's impossible to know. Like, you just never know. So you imagine the continuity on this team, you know, a three-year starter, like, he knows the offense, but yeah, I mean, if you got a different guy calling the plays, that can definitely, in the biggest game of the season, that can definitely make an impact.
Yeah, well, it happened, and Ohio State will now meet Alabama in the national title game. Fields gets his revenge over Trevor Lawrence. Alabama blows out Notre Dame 31-14. Notre Dame covers late in this game. It was a 19.5 point spread, so shout out to the Golden Domers on a great late cover. Ian Book, not good. Bama's defense, though, Clark Lee, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, you're loving to see what happened there. They did as well as they could have. Devontae Smith was still mostly unstoppable in this game. They got after Mac Jones a little bit. Najee Harris, solid. But, yeah, Notre Dame kept this close, and the biggest takeaway, it seems like, was that Notre Dame did not get completely blown out, but it was not close. So this was a different kind of blowout, where it's not in the point total. It was that you knew that there was no path to Notre Dame victory after the first quarter. I mean, we knew it coming in, but yeah, I just think until Notre Dame solves their quarterback issues, they're not going to be able to compete with the Bamas and the Clemsons and the Ohio States of the world. Because when you have a playoff with Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle could have been in this game, obviously. Najee Harris, Mechie, everybody that Bama can throw at you. And then you have Justin Fields, Sermon, Octave, the just Clemson with Travis Etienne, Trevor Lawrence, just guys everywhere. Powell. Notre Dame doesn't have that. They recruit five-star tight ends all over the place. Their offense is built around the tight end, which, okay, bold strategy. It works mostly in the regular season, but it will not work when you're playing.
They had a pretty good running game this year, too.
They did. But their offense and their passing game is about their tight end. And they play like a pro-style game. It's just, Ian Book is solid. He's a solid C-plus, B-minus quarterback. But, like, that, my biggest takeaway with Notre Dame is that until they get a first-round pick quarterback under center, they're not going to compete in these games. And I did like Brian Kelly after the game being like, what do you want us to do? And I don't blame him for this, because it's got to be frustrating for him and his team. But, like, man, that's an amazing season that Tennessee fans would kill for. Their only losses to be Clemson and Alabama. Like, an amazing season for Notre Dame. They're just not that level. And until they solve the quarterback thing, which is a really hard thing, it's getting a five-star, four-star quarterback, getting their next Brady Quinn with the talent around them, then it's just not going to happen, and we should keep them out because they simply cannot score enough to win. They just can't.
Yeah, I mean, they gave a good fight in this game. Like you said, the Alabama didn't necessarily run away with this game. I mean, this is the lowest point total of the entire season, you know, 31 points. So they were obviously doing something right. They were able to run the ball enough to sustain some drives. Just they really just weren't able to score many points. But, I kind of feel for Notre Dame in this situation, because there's just this narrative on just how just illegitimate they are and that they don't belong on this stage. And now that record is what, 0-7 now, and in the BCS era and BCS bowls or New Year's Six playoff games. And so that exists, you know, they are 0-7, but it's not like they're just being put in these games only because they're Notre Dame, and they're just, it's just some, you know, some corrupt system that's just putting a Notre Dame in here because of TV ratings and everything. Like they've been a good team, but they're just losing to the best teams, and pretty much everybody's losing to Clemson and Alabama. So I kind of feel for Notre Dame. I personally didn't think they deserved to be in the playoff this year, but it was just kind of based on, you know, getting blown out in the ACC championship in your season finale. Like, you just don't deserve to be in that Final Four. That's just my opinion. But to act like they're just some phony team that was miles better than, you know, that the SEC teams that didn't get in, like, I don't necessarily think that's true. So I do kind of feel for them, but it's just another loss in a big time game for Notre Dame.
But great season. We should not overlook that. It's a great season for them. And they played who they had to play, and they joined the conference. They didn't have to join, and they played football, played a full season. And it was a good season. One of the better Notre Dame seasons in history.
Before we move on, so this is just kind of off the top of my head here. So Saban and Dabo are obviously the number one and number two best coaches in college football. Who is your number three? Who's the third best coach in college football to you? Just putting you on the spot, because I think you could make a very easy case that Brian Kelly might be the third best coach in college football. I mean, like, there's so few coaches that have championships right now.
Head coach, because I think as much as I dislike Dabo, he belongs in that conversation because he's just such a good CEO. Like, he's just built maybe the best college football program outside of Saban in the last 10 years. So yeah, it's Saban, Dabo, 1-2. Ed Orgeron? No, I'm just kidding. I think in terms of what, like, I just think you have to look at it as an entire product, where like you're recruiting, how you manage your staff, how you hire, what you get out of your roster. It's probably number three would be Ryan Day. It's still probably got to be Ryan Day.
Okay.
Lincoln Riley 4. I like, we're just overlooking that he's just building a machine there, and they just keep winning Big 12 titles. Like, this year was a kind of forgettable Oklahoma team, and they just stroll through and win another Big 12 title.
We won't get off on that tangent. I was just curious.
I know you don't like Lincoln Riley, but Jimbo is probably in there too, by the way. Jimbo, I think, belongs in the top five.
Yeah, I honestly, I'd probably put Brian Kelly 3.
Kelly's somewhere in there.
Jimbo 4 and Kirby Smart 5. I think Kirby still, Ryan Day's still just in his second year. He's probably going to be there, but I still got to give him a couple more years.
I just think we overlook how, like, they're like, oh, it's a new coach, it's Ohio State. It's like, well, we've seen bad coaches at premier programs all the time. Like, it's not as easy as it seems of just like to step right in and follow Urban Meyer.
It's true, but Bob Stoops and Urban Meyer, like, they left those programs like right at, like,
for sure,
finely tuned machines, you know, like they were just ready to keep on rolling. Like, they didn't have, no one had to come in. Like, no, Brian Kelly and Kirby Smart had to come in and kind of rebuild a powerhouse program, you know. Like, Kirby Smart lesser than Brian Kelly, but he had to get Georgia at a more championship level. And I think you can see how much more consistently they're competing in the top 5 and top 10 compared to the last years of Richt. But now I don't want to get caught up on that. I was curious because Brian Kelly.
Yeah, that's fair.
We can, but yeah, we can, you know, talk about Alabama.
I mean, that's Bama's just gonna.
There's like, not much.
There's really not much to say. They did what they were supposed to do. Devontae Smith was unguardable most of this game. Yeah, they're going to be great, and I cannot wait to see Ohio State versus Bama. I'm far more interested in that game than I would have been in Clemson-Bama, because I think Bama would have blown out this Clemson team. I think Ohio State, it feels different with them, and they're healthy, and man, can you imagine the SEC homers if Ohio State were to win? It's like, they don't count like the fake national champions, like stop the count with Ohio State if they're up like 45 to 35 or something late in the fourth, that it doesn't actually count because Bama played a full SEC schedule and Ohio State didn't. Like, I don't think it's gonna go well if they upset Bama here. Have we seen an early spread?
I will say, as the SEC guy, if you will, No one's ever hating on Ohio State as much as they're hating on who Ohio State plays. You know what I mean? They
it's
know.
Only a 6.5-point favorite, by the way. Bama's only a 6.5.
6.5? Oh, I'm seeing 8 on ESPN.
FanDuel is 6.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, this should be a good one. And honestly, you're right. Like, this is gonna get us a better matchup than part 5 of Clemson, Alabama. I don't think we wanted to see that again.
I don't know. They were Clemson favored by 9 going into Clemson, Ohio State, I want to say.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So clearly they know that this is going to be a very close game. And I am excited to see it. Other bowl games that we've missed this last week, Matt, what do you have? What games do you want to hit?
Well, I thought Georgia was an impressive win over Cincinnati.
Maybe the best defensive play of the bowl season so far.
Which one was that? Aziz Ojulari?
No. Who was it? Was it Campbell who had the block?
Oh, on that 3rd and 2 at the end?
Yes. That literally
was,
saved
Tyreek
the game.
Stevenson.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that was a big time
underrated.
Call,
that was crazy. He came out, like, he left his man because he saw what was happening there and just threw his hands up instinctively, and he batted it down, because that's a touchdown if he doesn't make that jump, right? Like, that's it, and the game's over. Like, I was just blown away.
More importantly, it's a first down and the game's over. But yeah, and Tyreek Stevenson, he's the starting star in Georgia's defense, and without two of their starting corners, he actually had to start at corner in this game. So I thought it was a big win, just considering how many guys Georgia had out. But that's kind of what I was telling you. Like, even if Cincinnati won that game, like, you could obviously talk about, you know, however many players are missing. It wasn't, you know, too many. Like, Florida, like, we're not even going to see the same team. There's so many people missing. I thought I wasn't going to play the motivation card, because I thought it was big that someone like Jordan Davis was playing, and Aziz Ojulari, who's projected to be a first-round pick, decides to play in this game. Like, and he had 3 sacks. Like, he's the difference. Like, Georgia probably doesn't win that game without Aziz Ojulari. So – and Georgia had 8 sacks in the game, so I thought Cincinnati was a physical team all year, and they held Georgia's rushing yard to the second lowest rushing total the entire season, and I think that was the difference between Georgia at the end of the season to the start of the season, is that if you're holding them to 45 yards rushing, like, there's no chance they're winning the game. But with JT Daniels, they actually have a vertical passing game, and JT Daniels wasn't great in this game, but Georgia still made a lot of plays in the passing game. A whole lot better than Stetson Bennett, that's for sure.
I like it. I like it. Oklahoma, Florida. Feels like that happened 6.5 weeks ago. OU, man. Spencer Rattler really was quiet down the stretch here, but he was can't miss for Oklahoma. I think he was the second highest graded quarterback for PFF this season. Florida, obviously missing a bunch of pieces. Dan Mullen after the game, just showing his ass a little bit more, saying, quote, the 2020 team played their last game 11 days ago. I don't know. I don't have a strong takeaway from this, because, look, like, as much of a nuisance as Dan Mullen can be, like, not having Pitts and Tony and that whole group probably decided this game. like it probably was enough. Like, does Oklahoma win by 35, or is this like going down to the wire and they just go back and forth? Like, I don't know. Oklahoma's a really good football team, and then blowing the doors off Bam or Florida was great. But, you know, I think it's a fair point that like Trask has so much continuity with Pitts and Tony and all those guys that losing them a couple days before this game, a couple weeks, excuse me, that like, you know, hey, that this was probably going to be the result against a very motivated, good Oklahoma team.
Yeah, and I wondered, like, honestly, why Trask wasn't just opting out, because for exactly what you saw, like, if you're losing your top four receivers, like, the continuity is just going to be so off. Like, you're not going to be the best version of yourself. And you could tell that was by far the worst game Trask has played in his career. Like, I mean, one of those interceptions was just so uncharacteristic of the good decision making he's made all year. So that was just, I've seen so much smack talk, you know, on Twitter, like, oh, I don't care how many players were out. Like, it wouldn't have been that big of a difference. But it's like, we have no way of knowing that. Like, it's those are, Florida's offense was so good all year. Like, this was a bad matchup for Florida, like, if they were healthy, like, fully had all the players there. So I really would have liked to see what would have happened. But, yeah, I just – you can't take too much away from this game, and other than just – because Oklahoma just – or Florida was just so shorthanded. And then you got Dan Mullen just putting his foot in his mouth anyway. But, yeah, this is the fourth time Florida has been blown out by 30 points or more in the last five seasons. And that happened just once in the 25 years before that. So I thought that was a pretty crazy stat.
Where do you want to go next, Matt?
Next, let's go to the Orange Bowl, Texas A&M, North Carolina. What are your thoughts about this one?
Sam Howell doesn't eat anything but chicken fingers. We found that out during this broadcast. Did you see that?
I was not aware of that.
Has never had a steak, not a burger guy. Big chicken tendies guy. Chicken tendies and fries.
Wow.
So I'm very pro Sam Howell after this broadcast. Sam Howell.
Are you not a steak guy?
Nah, just I'm a huge chicken fingers and fries guy.
So where's your go-to? Is it Zaxby's?
Oh, it's everywhere. Like, I don't care. Like,
Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A, I've never gotten chicken fingers. Zaxby's chicken fingers are obviously awesome. The best one I've ever had, you know... You're really putting me on the spot a lot tonight, Matt. I got to think about that. I don't know. I don't want to shout out the wrong place, because I've
Fair
had
enough.
Chicken fingers from so many different places that, like, the best, I'd have to think about that for a second, because there are a lot of places that do it really well.
I don't want you to think too hard now.
You know what? Actually, I know what the answer is. It's Neighbors Bar and Grill in Atlanta, Georgia. It's very random, but, like, they are insane. And I don't know if you've been to Neighbors or there on Ponce, my old stomping grounds in the Highlands. Like, it Neighbors chicken tendies were one of my go-tos late at night back in my Atlanta days. Like, those are always fire. And yeah, that is my answer. Neighbors,
good stuff. But yeah, getting back to this game, it was unfortunate that North Carolina didn't have either of their running backs in this one, just because I thought this was going to be a great matchup. But shout out to North Gwinnett alum Josh Downs. Big time performance. 4 catches, 91 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. But all that matters. Like, that's my whole thing. Is like, I have no takeaways. It's like, North Carolina was running all over people, and those two were just insane this year, Williams and friends. And not having them changes how North Carolina plays and what they can do. So it sucks, because we lost a better product because they all opted out, and rightfully so. So I don't know. It's a bummer. I saw something about Iowa State Oregon here, strictly an off the field thing, which is, Iowa State should be banned from wearing all black. Like, why do they have this, and why is it so consistent with them? It's like, you're Iowa State. Why are they wearing all black all the time?
Yes. I gotta give props. Tom Fornelli.
That's who it was, yeah.
Yeah, he tweeted it. I give him props. Because I retweeted it. I was like, yes, like, someone else. Like, every week they rock these black and white. Like, you know, I'm a stickler for the uniforms anyway, you know, but not everyone can rock a black jersey. Like, not everyone's got black in their color scheme, and then not everyone can rock it. But Iowa State, you know, if you were rocking black and you had, like, some gold numbers, some burgundy numbers, some gold outline, you know, something in there that says you're Iowa State. Like, I feel like I'm watching the, what was it, the Miami Sharks? Is that the team from Any Given Sunday? Like, black and white. Like, what is this? It drives me crazy. I think it's like the fourth time they've worn them this year, and they wear them in like all the biggest games too. It's just, I hate it.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good. Northwestern blows out Auburn. Ole Miss, without Michael Penix, beat the Indiana Hoosiers 26-20. Kentucky survives NC State 23-21. See, you seem to like really want to hype up the SEC getting these W's. So go right ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not big on the whole like conference, like records and bowl games and stuff. Like, there's just so many variables in there. But when it's something like this and it's one of the better teams in another conference losing to like a bottom feeder in the SEC, I think it's worth noting. Like, people just hating on the SEC and everything, how beaten so down. And I was one of the people who said the bottom half of the SEC is just worse this year than it is in a lot of years. And Indiana, they were without Penix Jr., but to lose to, like I said, the seventh or eighth best team in the SEC and Ole Miss, I feel like that's kind of substantial. And NC State was probably, what, the fourth, fifth best team in the ACC this year? And to lose to Kentucky, I just feel like there weren't a lot of opt-outs in those games. I know Elijah Moore was an opt-out for Ole Miss. So, I don't know. I feel like that was something. And same with Tulsa and Mississippi State, which made headlines for different reasons. But, like, Tulsa was a, what, 6-1, 7-1 team this year? And Mississippi State was pretty terrible. And for them to beat Tulsa, it just kind of
flexed the SEC muscle. Well, Tulsa's best linebacker and first-round pick was out for this game, too.
Is that right?
Yes.
So, you know, there's opt-outs all over. So, I don't know. I thought a few of those results were interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to, like, rag on the ACC because they went 0-6 in this bowl game. Like, that doesn't just mean they're great. Like, the Big 12 went 5-0. That doesn't just mean they're great. But it is an interesting performance for sure. SEC 6-2.
Thank you for trying, player of the week, Sam Hartman of Wake Forest, who threw no less than 37 picks in the Wisconsin game. Did you watch any of that?
I did. It was hard.
It was brutal. Like, I didn't like watching it anymore. I didn't like watching Hartman just keep it going and over. And it's just like he was late and it was just bad reads. And I was like, what is he doing? Like, just a full-on implosion.
I just wanted to know, why can't they take one of these to the house?
Yeah.
What was that guy doing cutting back? Like, you got a blocker, just keep running straight. I thought I was watching a replay at one point. I was like, didn't this play just happen? But yeah, it was a nice performance for the Wisconsin defense.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Mississippi State 28, Tulsa 26. The brawl. We have to mention the brawl. Like, what an all-time post-game brawl. Did you see, who was it? I think it was a Mississippi State guy who, like, reared back with, like, a Herculean punch. Like, it was nasty. Like, this was a pretty nasty.
It was definitely nasty.
But can we also just say, announcers who are just like, oh, my God, I am so disgusted at what I'm seeing here. It's like, no, you're not. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this was insane. But also just being like, look away. Like, it just, the over-the-top.
Can we change the announcer, like, protocol that, like, look, your job is to call play-by-play.
Yes.
If this is what starts happening, you're a fight commentator now. you need to be calling out punches you see, calling out people stomping on people. Like, it was wild. Like, it felt like people were getting jumped at times, like stomping on people on the ground. Like, and you saw the Mississippi State dudes in the locker room, like celebrating, like seeing their fight on social media and stuff. And like, oh man, that one got out of hand.
It was wild, but, I'm glad it happened. Matt, do you have anything else you would like to add as we wrap up here on, this late Sunday night edition of the Full Ride?
I got nothing else, man. It's been a great season. We got one more game left. It should be great.
We got a lot to build off. I think this has been fun. I appreciate you doing this with me this year. This has been great. I think that we really got something here, especially heading into next year when it's going to be a hopefully, fingers crossed, normal season. We got a lot of recruiting stuff in the spring, coaching changes, how transfers, grad transfers, all that kind of stuff. We'll find stuff to talk about. But yeah, this is, for lack of a better word, been a fun ride this season, Matt. So I appreciate you making the time, and I'm excited for you to keep coming on here with me as we make the move.
Yes, sir. Sounds good, man.
All right. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got. Matt, thank you as always, my good sir, and we will be back very soon.
Sounds good.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.